Coming up on Windows Weekly with Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley, Microsoft Build is next week. What might they have to announce? Windows 10 has update issues. Cortana isn't really a voice assistant, and Paul thinks he has a way to save the Windows Store. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley. Episode number 568, recorded Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018. Paul saves the Windows Store. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so that you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley. It's like Avengers Infinity Wars for fans of Microsoft products. It's epic, it's riveting, and most everyone is dead by the end of the show. I'm Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit, in for Leo Laporte, who's still currently in Japan learning how to do Dance Dance Revolution. Of course, I'm joined by Paul Theroux. He is the purveyor of all things Microsoft, master of news and analysis at Theroux.com.
Okay. Wow.
And, master of many.
And, right. And which, by the way, he just finished up a Call of Duty session that saw him in the highlights reel. So, Paul, that's your achievement for the day, yeah?
Also in the last column, but yes.
You know, it's a moral victory, really.
It really wasn't, but I'll take whatever I can take.
And of course, Mary Jo Foley, she is the gentlewoman behind ZDNet's All About Microsoft blog. And I actually called it the right thing this time. Not all about Android, not all about Windows.
Nice work.
And I'm really earning that paycheck today. But together, they are a dynamic duo of Microsoftness. The explosion of Redmond onto the world. Now, we had a fun show last week, so we're not going to do that this time. This time we are all
business. This one's going to be terrible.
Serious.
Excellent.
Completely serious. Nothing about cats, nothing about pets, nothing about Xbox. It's all servers and licensing, I think is going to be the...
Actually, let me show you something real quick, because I thought this is beautiful to me.
Oh, good.
That's my
Very
cat.
Very good.
Wait, on the dog's bed.
Yeah, that's what I was like, wait a minute, that's awfully big for a cat bed.
Yep. It is. Not caring who owns it, that's her bed now.
Now, the only way that would be more perfect for YouTube is if next to it was the cat bed with your dog in it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so my dog is not very smart. And when we first bought the dog bed, I took pictures of it trying to lay on the dog bed. So there was like, she was laying next to the dog bed. She finally laid partially on the dog bed. And then eventually she figured it out. But then the cat stole it, so now that's over.
Well, of course, we got to start with the big news, and that is the two of you are going to be in the same place. Next week is the start of Microsoft Build, which this year is in Seattle. Last year it was in San Francisco, right? I missed both of them.
No, it was in Seattle last year.
Seattle.
When was it in San Fran?
Forever.
3 years ago?
Three years ago, dating back to forever is what it feels like.
Now, I'm starting to get all the news releases. They're under embargo, unfortunately. There are a few interesting things that I'm seeing, but what have you two heard? What can you talk about?
Can you give me one example?
I know, me too. I'm like...
Really?
Just one example.
There's something happening on Thursday morning. It's a talk with some guy at Microsoft about something they think is going to be big.
Wow.
I think
I will be flying home Wednesday night, so that's good timing for me.
Same.
So you haven't heard much?
No.
Not yet.
What would you guess?
No, we've been just like combing through the session list, basically.
Yeah. Which actually isn't a bad way to start.
It's not.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll surprise you.
Yeah, one of the things I think Mary Jo and I both do is kind of see how Microsoft presents things. It's interesting what's there and what's not there. What they say mm-hmm. on Monday and Tuesday is going to be interesting, obviously. You know, for example, one of the things that kind of surprised me is when they announced this new version of Windows 10, which we'll talk about in a bit, last week, they never mentioned progressive web apps, not even once. You know, they had several posts. To find any mention of PWAs, you had to go to the Edge developer blog, which I know we all do on a regular daily basis. But I kind of thought that PWAs were going to be a big part of this, that, you know, in the bullet list of here's the big stuff happening in this version, in my mind at least, the availability of PWAs in the store is kind of, you know, is a big one.
You know why I don't think they highlighted that, though? For one, I think they're going to talk about it at Build a lot. And secondly, the list of things they highlighted as being the big things in this release of Windows 10 were mostly consumer focused. You know, if you look at the list that they put out and they did separate little video clips for each thing, it was mostly on things like timeline and dictation and things like that. It wasn't on things for IoT. It wasn't on things for IT pros or even for developers. Yeah. So I think it's going to be next week that we'll hear PWA stuff.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And you know, when I think about the big themes I'm looking for at Build, I mean, Windows is number one just because, well, because it's Windows. But given everything that's happened recently, I'm going to be very curious to see how they present a positive face to the world. And I think they're going to. I think that's the plan. In fact, when mm-hmm. they added that second keynote on Tuesday and expanded it from just a little bit of the first keynote into its own thing, I think that was the message right there that, you know, they're going to put on a brave face, you know, for the future. And that makes tons of sense. But number two for me is PWAs. I don't understand why this isn't getting more, you know, press from them.
Yeah.
Given it was a years long process.
I know. You know, they're walking a weird tightrope on PWAs, right? Like, so at Build, they're going to talk to their traditional .NET developer base and say, you know, you can keep doing UWP apps. You can keep building, you know, full native apps. Oh, and then we have this PWA thing too. But they're trying not to totally kill off the idea that some people will still want to do native app development. So they are like kind of balancing things.
Native. What is a native app these days? You know, it's
true.
Obviously, Microsoft has been pushing UWP and its predecessor for several years now. And I think it's equally obvious that Greenfield or, you know, new app development on mm-hmm. Windows is really not kind of a thing. And we don't really have a good example of any example of a major UWP app from a major vendor. So they've adapted. And I don't think they get enough credit for this, you know, because this sounds like a criticism of UWP, which I'm happy to present. But really, what this is about is Microsoft adapting to the reality of the situation. You know, there was a little blurb. Let me see if I can just find the name of this because I don't want to mess this up. But there's something called the UWP Community Toolkit, which they're renaming to the Windows Community Toolkit. It's a tiny thing, but I think that's part of the overall change that's occurring here, where UWP was such a heavy focus for a while. And the reality is, they've got the various flavors of .NET, including .NET Core. They've got all the .NET-based technologies like WinForms and WPF, whatever. Mm-hmm. Win32 is still a thing, unfortunately. Yeah.
And then they have Xamarin, UWP, right? They have Xamarin and XAML.
So, you know, UWP becomes one of the ways that Microsoft-oriented developers can create apps or services or whatever. And it's not... we'll see whether that's subtle or very explicit at the show, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is part of a, you know, a rational de-emphasis of this thing that really, frankly, is not taking the world by storm.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about PWAs. Everyone was talking about progressive web apps and how they were going to take the world by storm, how finally developers had a platform that was truly, truly write once, run everywhere, because that's been the promise of basically every version of Windows and every other operating system since forever.
Oh, Java. I mean, dating back 20 years now.
Yeah.
Sure. This is the dream. Yeah.
This is the dream. And it just like every other time, it overpromised and it underdelivered.
Well, I feel like PWA has the chance to work. And one of the things that is cool about PWA that was not the case, say, with Java or whatever, is that you can create native experiences even with this web technology. And so like the Twitter app, for example, is the only good example we have on Windows, but it supports notifications, it supports live tiles, it supports the jump lists, and they're promising more, you know, native Windows 10 features for the future. That same app on Android and hopefully on iOS in the future, if Apple does the right thing, will be able to expose native features for those platforms as well. And I think the issue is that we don't have too many examples of what I just said. Twitter's a great one, obviously.
There's a reason for that. And yeah. I think you could go back to WebRTC. If you remember a couple of years back in mm-hmm. the unified communication space, WebRTC was the big thing. It's like, oh my goodness, finally mm-hmm. we're going to be able to communicate right. across all these different communication suites because we're all going to be using WebRTC. The technology was promising, but when they actually got to the development, these companies realized, wait a minute, why are we dumping money into an interface that doesn't really belong to us, that can be copied mm-hmm. incredibly easily and may not make back its development budget? And so mm-hmm. they went back to traditional apps. They said, no, we're going to sell you something. You're going to install it. It's going to be branded for us. It's going to work the way we want it to work. And that's just what we're going to do because we need to make money.
Sure.
It's a developer thing.
There's also, I think, the issue of as the world has kind of moved to web and mobile apps, these things tend to not be, although there are exceptions, obviously, but they tend not to be as big and kind of command dense as traditional desktop applications on the Mac or on Windows or whatever. And it's a little awkward. I think one of the things that's tough on Windows 10 with this mobile app platform that they built into it is that those apps just feel kind of unprofessional. You know, if you compare
right.
Any of the apps that are built into Windows with, you know, Microsoft Office 2016 or whatever, there's a big jump there from a UX/functional perspective. And I feel like, you know, Twitter's kind of the same. Twitter's a simple app, right? So I happen to like it. It's got a minimalist kind of vibe. It's not Microsoft Office, right? So I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm sure it is to some degree. We have web word processors and so forth, obviously, including Microsoft does too. But I think we need to start seeing that stuff and whether that stuff is possible in the PWA space. You know, I think that's going to be a big deal.
Yeah. Every time I've seen
if it happens.
A PWA demonstration, it's always been more Twitter-like than Office.
Yeah, Starbucks mm-hmm. or Alibaba online shopping app or whatever. And it's got to mm-hmm. be more than a containerized website. You know, you could turn my website into a PWA, and who knows, maybe we will. But in some ways, it's like, well, what's the point? I mean,
yeah.
A couple of offline articles or whatever. It's not, it's a website, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's just a perception thing for developers too, you know, getting past this notion that it's a website and developing things that are more app-like. We'll see.
But it also,
I just say that a lot. We'll see.
It fights against how applications are sold, mm-hmm. which will typically start mm-hmm. with a website, but then that drives you to the application purchase. Mm-hmm. If the website is the app, you kind of short-circuit that. And like you said, there's a serious issue here with it not looking professional because there are certain things you cannot do with a PWA that you can with a native app.
For sure.
Until we don't think that's important anymore, developers are going to look at that and say, well, then why would I do
it anyway? There are classes of apps that make sense for PWAs. I use web apps for email and for calendar. I use the Twitter app. There's no reason a markdown type editor, which is, you know, kind of a rich text editor or a programmer's editor or whatever, couldn't be implemented in that type of an app. The OneNote web app easily, obviously, is an example of something that is fine. And that's most of what I use right there. Cat's going to hit me in the face with a microphone. excuse my cat while she pets herself on my microphone. There are web versions.
Line of business apps, though, right? Like line of business apps for vertical markets, probably not going to be PWAs, right? I mean, I think you would still.
I don't know that they're going to want to do it. You know,
I agree.
I think that a corporation, you know, to completely generalize this, is going to be more comfortable just having that website, you know, that they want you, even though it's the same thing, really. I think it's just a conceptual thing for them or a perceptual thing, a perception thing.
But, Mary Jo,
I'm thinking more like, say, a medical app, right? To control a piece of medical equipment. Like something
you're saying
really
you don't want that
mundane.
To be a JavaScript app for some reason?
I'm just saying, like, would that be a PWA?
I don't understand, Mary Jo. The last time I had a serious enough issue to be in a hospital, I was x-rayed by a Next computer. And that was 10 years ago-ish. I mean, which is 10 years ago-ish after that thing should never have been used again.
Right.
But yeah, sure. I'm sure it was a native app.
Mary Jo, we've got Gardner in the chat room who is wondering if you would use a PWA notepad application.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you would.
Right? So there you go. We've got one practical example.
Yeah.
Yeah, but by the way, again, an example of a very simple app. PWA notepad app would be very easy to create.
And here's what I would like a PWA notepad app, but I would not like a fluentized UWP 3D notepad app.
I'm glad you said that because given what's going on in Windows 10 today, which do you think is more likely?
B.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, by the way,
you have to choose the style of transparency on your notepad app.
Since last week, you guys got me excited about 1803, so I went ahead and installed it on one of my test computers, and immediately uninstalled it because it borked everything. So
you're in that.
Yep.
I think it's fair to say that the reaction to this release has been mixed. Early days.
I thought it was okay. When it first installed, it looked nice. I'm like, okay, this isn't bad. And about 3 hours in, I started discovering all the things that weren't working anymore, including I couldn't get any of my USB video devices to work anymore.
I'm having a USB problem on one of my computers right now with this build. In fact, when I upgraded...
Yeah, microphones... There's a lot of things like that, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard to say. It's impossible to say, but the computer I used for the book had been on Windows 10 S or S mode. It was on the original RTM build. It was working fine. And then I upgraded to the new version, and now Bluetooth doesn't work, and I've got this USB hardware error that I've been trying to... Once in a while, I can get it kind of cleaned up in Device Manager, but it keeps coming back. I don't know why Bluetooth is not there. It's like a gremlin snuck into the computer and plucked the little module off the motherboard or something. But
I had problems like this before, and what I've typically done is just gone into the Device Manager in safe mode and just deleted all the devices, and then it reinstalls, and that fixed it. It did not work this time.
I did some research on my particular problem, and I forget the exact error message, but it basically involves something to do with what happens to USB devices when the device goes to sleep, and you could turn that off. And and I was able to, you know, because like a normal person, I go and I look at Device Manager from time to time, and I like it to be clean.
Yeah.
And it's not. And I fixed it, I thought, but now it's back. And also Bluetooth, I don't know what's going on with that. Bluetooth has just left the building, apparently.
It's always funny.
So we should talk about why we think this happened too.
Yes.
So the reason we think that people are getting various kinds of problems that we see random reports of is because of how this was rolled out, right? So we all were expecting 17133 to be the quote RTM build and to come out a while ago. And then when that didn't happen and there was kind of radio silence from Microsoft, except for a post saying, you know, we're going to go to 17134 because there's some random blue screening things happen, which they never really said what was causing that, right? On Monday, they started rolling out Windows 10 April update, as it's called now, Redstone 4.
Can you use the language, because you did this morning when we were kind of chatting. What was the language they used for what Monday's release was supposed to be? Do you remember? It was something like for people who look for it or something, or they used a particular.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I should go back a little bit. So Friday, we all wrote these embargoed posts that we all had saying, hey, Monday's going to be the day. Finally, you're going to be able to get it if you go and seek for it. So Microsoft's starting to use this new language, seekers, right?
Seekers.
So they're saying, if you're seekers, if you're one of the people going out and proactively trying to look for it and get it, then you will be among the first people who can have it. So in the past, what that meant was you had to go through the whole process of using, what do they call that? The media update tool and do all these different steps. But now, this is new. As of this week, if you even just check Windows Update on your Windows 10 PC, you may suddenly summon this to appear and you got it.
He sounds like a demon.
I know.
If you say the name three times, it will install itself.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. So that was new. Like in the past, that wasn't what had happened on day one. In the past, it was we were doing this on a staggered basis. And first, we're going to let the people who proactively want to go get it. Then there's going to be a next wave where we start slowly pushing it through Windows Update to the best known, the machines with the most likelihood of success, best known, profiles, then expand the ring, expand the ring. That doesn't seem to be what they're doing this time.
No. And I wonder if this is purposeful though, right? I mean,
it is purposeful. Yeah.
Okay. It's very strange.
Doing this on purpose.
Well, the reliability of updating, for lack of a better term, has been kind of up and down, right? The last two releases went very well, actually, after a really disastrous turn 2 years ago with the, was it 2 years ago? Yeah, 2 years ago with the anniversary update. Mm-hmm. I find it odd how late in the game they add new features to these builds right before the product is finalized. I feel like that's
it's mystifying.
A warning sign.
It really is.
Yeah, it's not good software engineering, you know.
It's like some PR guy comes down and says, hey, you know what? There's not enough features in this. We promised them features. We need to throw in some features.
Look, I get it. You know, Windows is a service, supposedly, right? And the delta between the day you say this thing is done and the day you deliver it to customers is much smaller than it used to be. There used to be months of time, right? And then it was weeks. And now it's kind of days. And even with this, after all the they had all these problems. They were literally, this thing was heading out to the world. And then they realized they had this blue screening problem, pulled it back, like she was saying. But, okay, we're going to do a second go around. Now, obviously, you're going to take a more measured approach to this version. But no, they didn't. They put it in the fast ring. They put it in the slow ring the next day. And then that same day, they put it in the production release or the release preview ring. And it's just kind of, here it comes, you know. And pushing it out this quickly, most of my computers are already upgraded. But I opened up an older HP laptop. That was on 1709, you know, Windows key plus I, you know, go to Windows Update, check for updates. Bam. They got the update immediately. That's alarming. You know, that there's no reason for that to happen this quickly. And there are many reasons for it not to.
You know, and the other thing that normally happens that didn't happen this time is no cumulative update came to normal users when they got it, right? So usually what happens is you get the RTM build and then you get a cumulative update, right? At this,
now,
like right
I,
after.
I feel like I've, I, no one has told me this, but I between the events that I just described, which are, I had installed the original RTM build, which used to be on the Insider Preview, on many PCs, several PCs, and then I just installed the final shipping version using the ISO that Microsoft provided. I think I can state conclusively that the reason that didn't happen is because of the screw up where they had to advance the build, because they did release a CU for that build. And then they did release a CU to insiders. Right. So I got people who were writing, because I wrote a tip, as I do for each version of Windows, where I tell them, look, there's this magic window occurring, right? Where Microsoft has concluded the development of a version of Windows 10. So you can do two things. You can put a PC on the Insider Preview, fast ring, install the build, reboot, and then get out of the Insider Preview, and you're good to go. You're on production. And that's a way you can get that new build as quickly as possible. If you're already in the Insider Preview, that window is that time period where you can disenroll your PC from the program and just get out and get back on the mainstream normal shipping version of Windows 10. It's important to know when you can and cannot do this, because once that window closes, the only thing you can do after that is reset your computer to get back to whatever the normal version of Windows 10 is. So I got people who were, you know, kind of freaking out, because, I mean, think about the process. Like 17.133 was the final build. I tell everyone, you're free to do the magic window trick. You're good to go. Microsoft screws up. They change the build. It's like, uh-oh, what happens now? Well, they reset the window. So you have to go back, re-enroll your computer Insider, upgrade to the new build. It's the only way to get it. Get back out again. Well, we heard there was a CU. We're not getting it on the computers we use the magic window trick on. Is something wrong, you know? No, I don't think so. And the reason I don't think so is, like I said, on an older HP, I installed it using the version that Microsoft delivered from Windows Update, and that PC did not get the cumulative update. So what that tells me is, because of the schedule screw-up, that CU, which is now available to people who are still in the Insider program, mm-hmm. will almost certainly come out next Tuesday, which is Patch Tuesday, the second Tuesday of the month. And then we're just, and away we go. And I think it's just a fluke of the timing.
Next Tuesday also is the day, if you weren't a seeker, you'll start seeing it over Windows Update, right? So maybe if you get
if you're not a seeker.
After Tuesday, you'll get the CU and the RTM build like you would have normally.
Yeah, I think I think the process would be, assuming your computer is in that first round of known good configurations or whatever. Yeah, you'll get the you'll get the update, the feature update. You'll have to reboot, sign into Windows. If you check again or eventually over time, you'll just get it automatically. You will get that CU. That's my expectation.
Yeah. So here's another worrisome wrinkle of this for IT pros of what how this whole rollout happened. Yesterday on Twitter, Robert Haas, he has sent me a tweet and he goes, hey, did you look at the chart that they normally use to tell you which build you should be on if you're in these different rings, you know? I'm like, no, I didn't look at that. And he goes, so it's telling IT pros that the latest version we should be running is 1709, not 1803. It doesn't say that 1803 has been promoted to what used to be called semi-annual channel targeted, right?
Is that actually unusual though? Because I thought there was a time period of whatever number of weeks or months or whatever where they recommended to IT. Okay, but you know what I'm talking, right?
This is not the thing that used to be called current channel for business. I mean, current branch for business.
I can't wrap my head around all of this stuff, so I literally just ignore it.
Yeah, but
I have a vague
so listen to this
memory of this.
So, so the guy sends me that, and I said, you know, I bet that's just a mistake. I bet it's supposed to say 1803, blah, blah, blah. And then I talked to one person who said, no, it shouldn't. And then somebody else, then Donna Sarkar, the head of the Windows Insider program, said, we used to describe that the SAC, which is semi-annual channel, which means 1803, upon its release is in the target phase. But now we're changing this and we're just saying people should be like figuring this out and piloting it on their own time and everything. So what that means to me is some IT pros are going out and saying, okay, should I be deploying it or not? I can't tell from that chart. They used to tell me there was a targeted release. Now they're not saying that because they're doing away with the targeted thing. So I think that adds a whole extra kind of should I be doing it now or not?
This is a slight exaggeration, but I feel like with every Windows 10 version, they change the names or the rules for how the business upgrades work. Yep. And a part of it, I'm sure, is responding to their customers who are probably freaking out at the rapid pace at which versions are expiring. And we're not going to hear about this at Build, but I fully expect by the time Ignite comes around that this will be rejiggered yet again, because this 18-month thing, is that the schedule now we're on for version expiration? Mm-hmm. It is one, literally half the time it used to be between Windows versions, and thus approximately 1/6 the time at which an average company would ever upgrade to a new version of Windows. It's crazy fast compared to what they're used to and compared to what they want.
I mean, it's annoying if you're a consumer. If you are an IT manager at a decent-sized enterprise, that's a nightmare. Yeah. It takes 18 months just to plan a proper deployment and make sure you're not breaking every app that you need in the company. And actually, there's another bit to this.
But what's the expectation? You're just going to do this every 18 months? So we're just going to wind it up again? I mean, that's why people leave jobs. You know, I just don't want to keep doing the same thing over and over again. It's crazy.
Yeah. You know, I saw Paul did a whole thing where he did some of his predictions and possibilities around Build and what he thought would be in Build and what wouldn't be in Build. And when I saw this one, I'm like, you know, I keep hearing you guys say that you think they're going to backtrack on this. And I don't think they are.
Really?
I don't think they are. I think they are like full steam ahead, guys, and you guys got to get with the program, and here it is.
It's not necessarily a backtrack.
You can't be customer-centric and not do what your customers want. And when you think about, 2/3 of their business at least is these enterprise slash business customers, commercial customers, really, because it's education, government, whatever. There is no big percentage of them that wants this. I just feel like there's a breaking point that has to happen where, you know, congratulations, by the way, you got Windows Update as a service. Great job on that. We're not doing that. The CU stuff every month, I think, probably works. I'm sure who knows? We don't have any data on this, but some percentage of businesses, defers or delays these updates for some number of months routinely. That's probably the way that goes, and that's great. But it's these feature updates that I think are the problem, and they're just too big.
We discussed this a little bit on Security Now yesterday. There's 4 KBs that were released a week ago to patch the Spectre issues with certain CPUs.
Right.
Except those patches were not included in 1803. So if your computer installed the Spectre mitigations a week ago, they were now uninstalled by 1803.
It's just too much. You know, when you implement change, you are risking problems. You know, there's obviously a benefit to it. The security or cumulative update type stuff doesn't introduce that level of complexity or potential for problem. And I think that's fine. The other thing is, you know, and we think we talked about this last week, I mean, the notion that, you know, Windows, especially for businesses, is this legacy tool that we use to get work done. And we're not looking for the latest enhancement in Windows Mixed Reality or to add emojis to our Microsoft Teams messages or, you know, whatever this kind of nonsense is. And I think what they want is something stable that's not going to change all the time. And Microsoft is promoting this thing that's going to change all the time. And I don't think that's what they want.
Yeah, I don't think they care what they want. I'm always the pessimist on this one. I'm like, they say they're customer centric, but you know what? They're trying to pull you along and like say, you know, like they're saying, guys, we know you have a way of doing things, and this is the way you've always done it, but it doesn't mean that's the right way. And we're going to get you to change. And we're going to, even if we have to hammer you over the head, we're going to get you to change. So what you can do if you're a business and you really are like, nope, I'm not doing this, you go to LTSC, you know, the long-term servicing channel, and you just say, okay, I don't want any of the updates except security patches. That's it.
Right. Okay. At least that's available. The problem is it's not broadly available if you're not an enterprise, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as what the response might be, I mean, I think the fear for Microsoft should be that the pushback will include, well, fine, you know, you talked about line of business applications. We're going to push those all to the web, and we can run that stuff on anything. And I think we're going to start handing out phones and tablets and stuff, and maybe even Chromebooks. And, by the way, those updates are not disruptive in any way. And, you know, sometimes there's a snowball effect. I mean, you can't be this tone deaf to what your customers want and not get pushback.
Yeah. You know, one interesting thing that also was announced as part of this whole 1803 update was Microsoft is also, you know, because now they're talking about everything as Microsoft 365. So they're talking about all these other things that they're updating at the same time as the April update. And one of the things they talked about was Configuration Manager. And I have to admit, I haven't been paying as much attention to Configuration Manager as I used to, but Brad Anderson, who runs that whole team and is responsible now for Microsoft 365 all up in his new role, he said in the newest build, well, it's not the very newest, but it's called Configuration Manager 1802. Mm-hmm. They're starting to introduce this idea of deployment rings in that. So if you manage your PCs using Configuration Manager, you can control like how it rolls out to your organization. So you can have a small like test group who would get a new build and set it to like, once it's good with them, deploy it slightly broader inside your org and then broader. I don't know how much that's a reality and how much that's aspirational at this point, but it's a good idea, I think.
How does anyone keep track of this stuff? You know, I can find like Jeff Woolsey or one of the old guys and be like, I need you to explain to me, A, that what's happening, and B, that this is not insane. You know, like explain to me that this is better, please, and that this actually solves customer problems.
Yeah.
The part
for me that's the worst optics for Microsoft on this is how buggy patches are that come out every patch Tuesday. I think this is why IT pros are afraid, right, and justifiably so, of this Windows as a service. Because like Padre just pointed out, you know, the Spectre patches aren't even in the new build that's coming out. So say you happen to be a seeker and you suddenly got this on your machine. Now you're not patched anymore, right? And it's like,
Just a little bit of advice. If you are a seeker, please don't ever identify yourself publicly as one. You might be deported from the country these days.
You guys seekers or not?
What sounds like a Kabbalah thing, was a seeker.
Isn't, right. What's the opposite of a seeker?
Yeah, like a lurker.
No, if you're like just hanging back and letting it happen to you.
A stoner?
I wasn't
seekers,
thinking that far.
Seekers and stoners. The Windows user base
in a
nutshell.
Are you a seeker or a stoner?
careful. That might be the next Microsoft ad campaign.
Oh, man.
Now, to play devil's advocate real quickly here, though. I'm with you. I understand. I find it mystifying that Microsoft can't get this right. However, the fact that they've actually changed the internal organization of the company so that Microsoft is not, I mean, Windows is not really like the super sacred cow / golden calf / profit center that it was, that at least shows that they're listening a little bit or organizationally.
Oh, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, because if you think about the way the company has divided up Windows, the core, you know, what we used to call like the kernel and the stuff around the kernel, whatever, is back in what used to be the server group, which is now the Azure group. And that makes tons of sense. But as far as like the release cadence or whatever, the schedule, the ability of Microsoft to ship new features on a biannual basis, which is the current schedule, is completely separated from that. That stuff happens through these experiences groups like Joe Belafiore's group and so forth. And there's no reason they can't keep cranking out nonsense at a stupid rate, you know, twice a year or whatever. The underlying core of the operating system doesn't have to change at all, actually, between releases, right? Or it will only change a little bit in most cases. So I don't know. I kind of hope that part of the point of this reorg, such as it is that there's going to be a restructuring of this other stuff. But I as far as what we know about it so far, I don't actually think it changes anything, you know, frankly.
You don't? Really?
Not from the concern of they released too many updates, right? Nothing in this change suggests that that has to change. And that is unfortunate.
Right. You know, I was thinking about this a lot as kind of first we heard about the reorg. And then we heard how Microsoft was rolling this out. And they're these days, they're trying to not talk about Windows as its own thing. And you hear them say more and more Microsoft 365, right?
That is that's evidence to the contrary of what I said, for sure. Absolutely. And this is why, you know, right at the top of the show, I'm sorry. I just, you know, you and I, when we go to build and before build, we're looking for the language they use. And this is a good example of this. Mm-hmm. We're looking for a shift in how Windows is presented as a thing, you know? If it is a component part of Microsoft 365, it's like it becomes a perk, like a point in a bulleted list of things on a PowerPoint presentation. That's a, you know, that's a major change. But I still think they're going to stand up on day two and be like, rah, 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 you know, everything's great.
So day two's keynote, we keep talking about day two's keynote and Joe, right? So day two's, there wasn't supposed to be a day two keynote. There was only supposed to be one build keynote. When they came out with the full session list, they said, oh, yeah, there's also a day two keynote, right? And it's going to be 1.5 hours. Joe Belafiore is going to talk. Here's what his talk is called: Microsoft 365 Application Development. So what do you think we're going to hear in that talk? We're not going to just hear
Xbox,
about Windows.
Obviously, Xbox.
So I touched on this very briefly in that build thing I wrote today, but aside from the fact that I do expect at some point to see a Microsoft 365 for consumer, right? The point of that subscription being almost literally to ensure that as many people as possible are in Windows 10, because now you'll just get that as part of your subscription, right? Mm-hmm. Is this notion of Office 365 multiplied, right? The beauty of Office 365 is that now you know that your customers have Exchange and SharePoint and whatever else, right? They have everything. They don't. You don't have to worry that they only have parts of it. So in the past, when Microsoft would make improvements to Exchange, it had to be a standalone thing for Exchange because you could never rely on the fact that they might have other Microsoft products. With Office 365 now, you have a much bigger assumption about what they have. When you throw in Windows, it's kind of the same thing, right? Now you assume that they have Windows 10. And now the features that you put into the Office products can target Windows 10 explicitly and only Windows 10. It's a kind of a self-feeding way to push people forward.
Mm-hmm. It is. And also a way of trying to make it simpler, I think. Like right now we're in this transition period where it looks crazy to us right now. Like we're talking about Config Manager 1802 and then there's 1803 that's Windows and there's something else, right? But I think with Brad Anderson running this whole, you know, all up Microsoft 365, and he is alongside Joe Belfiore in this new org that's not the same org that builds Windows, I think this actually might be good news. I do. I think it might signal that they're trying to get their act together and make a more cohesive story. But to take advantage of it, you will have to buy all in on Microsoft 365.
Does it surprise either of you that they made the first day keynote not about 365? Because it sounds to me, really? I thought they would lead the developer show.
Listen, in the .NET, C#, Microsoft developer space, the way forward for these guys, the volume way forward is the cloud. And they're going to want to talk about Azure and all the amazing services that these guys can take advantage of. Honestly, for that crowd, the client doesn't matter in the slightest. The idea there is that it should work with whatever. You know, if you get people hitting this thing with iPhones or iPads or Android phones or Windows PCs,
I mean, they're definitely going to be talking about their new IoT offering because they're going hot and heavy on that. I mean, they want to spend $5 billion over the next couple of years.
But you know, they just updated Windows 10 IoT for the April 2018 update as well. There's a lot going on there. I mean,
guess what? I asked about that. Uh-oh. They haven't updated it yet. Wait, they put out that blog post, but it's not there yet.
I see.
Oh, well,
So my natural reaction to that is, well, of course, but no one would have noticed that, Mary Jo. So it doesn't really matter. They can just announce stuff and neat. It's like we updated HoloLens. You know.
Not yet.
I think the potential market for Windows 10 IoT is fairly small. It doesn't mean that it's non-existent. We've already seen some solutions like that Cortana-based thermostat, you know, based on this technology, right? That's a Windows, I think it's a Windows 10 IoT device.
It is.
But I think as far as volume goes, I don't really think this is ever going to be a big volume market for Microsoft or for developers. And I think that explains the Azure Sphere stuff.
So, Padre, the reason we're not surprised, I think you were here when it was 3 years ago. We all came to TWIT after Build because it was in San Francisco.
Right.
And that year, the whole first day keynote was data lakes and big data.
I remember that.
I got car sick when I was still in the stadium listening to in the Moscone. Just listening to this. It was
I was so tired of lakes and forests. Yeah. And
I think we're going to have this again, though.
And we introduced another database. Hooray.
So, you know what? Day one at Build, I think, is going to be, here's what I think we're going to hear. We're going to hear the Sphere stuff, the IoT stuff, but also quantum computing and lots of stuff about Cosmos DB and MariaDB and all the stuff about big data. And but the reason they're doing it, right, is because they're trying to get developers who've always just targeted Windows to start thinking about targeting the cloud. And one of the ways you get them to target the cloud is you say, hey, you know what the cool thing is? It's AI. What do you need for AI? You need data. Guess what we have? Yep. We have a ton of data products in the cloud and on-prem. We're going to tell you about them. That's what's going to be day one.
Yeah, totally. That's going to be the whole thing for sure.
Yeah,
I'm going to sleep in that day. It's going to be great.
There'll be some quantum. Will be in there as a future aspirational.
I'm not particularly smart, but I've had two moments in my life, Microsoft related, where I was presented with a topic and it was flying over my head. I had no idea what they were talking about. And then afterwards they said, hey, you can have a meeting with these guys and you can learn more. Do you think that would be valuable? I'm like, yeah, I have no idea what they were just talking about. And then I go to the second meeting and I literally have no idea what they're talking about. The first one was Azure, back when it was still called Windows Azure. And back then it was only what was it? Something, not platform, is it? What the heck was it originally? Infrastructures? I don't remember. Something
as a service. At first it was platform as a service, then it added infrastructure as a service. Yeah.
And I was like, just tell me this thing is Windows Server in the cloud, please. And they're like, no, it's a little more nuanced than that. I'm like, But the second one was quantum computing. And
yeah,
that was last year, right? I'm still suffering from this. It was horrible. You may recall I walked out of the meeting and I was like, I wrote an article. The headline said, quantum computing explained. And then the first line of the article said, is the article I would like to write, but I have no idea what this is.
I know. He came out of the meeting and I'm sitting there. I'm like, I didn't even take the meeting because it's way over my head. So I'm glad you can explain it to me. And he's like, no, I can't.
Explain it to you. All I can do is cry. I have no idea what they're talking about. All I know is there are really smart people again. Out there. Yeah.
Going to hear more about quantum, AI, IoT. That's going to be
remember Seth Juarez is getting all like, he's like jumping up and down like a little girl. He was all over this. He completely understood what they were talking about. I'm looking at this guy like, what's going on here? I have no idea what you're saying. You're speaking a different language.
Oh, okay, but wait. I understand that. And I get it. A lot of times it's their buzzword keynotes. However, I actually think their IoT strategy is going to make much more sense at this year's build. I'm dead serious. This is not sarcastic. Same. Because of the TCPS, it's the Trusted Cyber Physical Systems Platform. They actually have.
So you think the security bit that they're building in is what's going to put this over the top?
Absolutely. I think that
is the fear with IoT, right? That we're going to have all these smart devices all over our home, and then surprise, the Russians just took over. Mm-hmm.
And that's why Windows 10 IoT never took off, because it was just another OS that ran on a Internet of Things that could still get owned.
You know what? So Windows 10 IoT, as I understand it, is basically, it probably has some strength for like what I would call like a kiosk type solution. Like, in other words, we're going to have like a smart sign or something, or something that someone walks up and they can tap on the screen and it does stuff. I think it's for those types of things where it makes sense. It's almost like a single app environment is what it's Windows underpinnings. It runs one thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's probably not too many potential security issues there, but there's also not too much that you can do with that kind of thing. It's like a single purpose. My cat is insistent on ruining this podcast.
No, it's making it. I'm making it all better.
Sure. Aww.
Internet of cats. No, but with IoT running with their secure platform, this is what I love about it. Mm-hmm. They're giving you secure hardware, and it's not just hardware that some security has been built into. They built it thinking that we're going to make everything inside of it trusted.
Is there any irony to Linux plus TPM? Anything? Remember when TPMs were hitting in PCs and the Linux community was freaking out because this was how Microsoft was going to lock Linux out of PCs?
Well, I mean, that's actually one of the selling points, though, because if they've got the software signed to the hardware, then you're not going to have a problem.
So if I understand what you're saying, let me just break this down as a slightly different form. You're saying that Microsoft has embraced and extended Linux. I'll just end the sentence there.
Yeah. We should tweet that.
Is that what that is?
That's
an interesting concept.
No. But I mean, the way that they're doing IoT is you use Azure. So it's Microsoft will take care of the security part of it for you. Yes, that actually can sell. And as you said, it's a niche market, but it's a very profitable niche market.
No, actually, I think the thing you're describing is not a niche market. The market for Windows 10 IoT, Core or Enterprise, whatever, I think that's kind of a niche market. I think this does represent a mass market, and it's a mass market in terms of units, right? Because these devices are so small, embedded, can be in anything, and I think they will be in anything. For some reason, when Brad Smith was doing this announcement, he kept focusing on the notion that it would be in a toy. This would be appealing to anyone, that I'm going to give this robot teddy bear to my child and it's going to be spying on them or whatever it is.
No.
I don't know why he did that, but certainly it will be in teddy bears and toys. But I think the point of it is that it's going to be everywhere. And when you're, from a developer perspective, I think this is why it's going to be huge. What you're looking for is addressable market. And the potential here is humongous. I mean, we'll see what the reality is, obviously, as it happens. But this is why I think this is such a big deal, because, as the smartphone did to the PC from a volume standpoint, Microsoft wasn't able to be part of that wave. I think IoT has the opportunity to do that to the smartphone and to mobile.
Yeah. Well, in this country alone, we have tens, if not hundreds of millions of SCADA devices that this is squarely aimed at. I mean, it's almost custom designed for those applications. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Right.
And so the thing they'll talk about, obviously, at Build is the SDK for this whole thing, right? Because that they said, you know, we got an SDK coming for this Sphere IoT thing. So that'll be the news at Build. It'll be like, here's your SDK. Go build some stuff.
You get an SDK. And you get it. To check under your seats. Everyone's getting an SDK.
It's quite the giveaway this year. It's an IoT SDK. Enjoy.
Now go home.
Yeah, now leave. Yeah, exactly.
We should mention.
You don't need much of a computer to use this.
We should mention that on Monday, the schedule will be different. We're going to be doing the Microsoft Build keynote starting at 8:30 Pacific time here on Twit TV. It will be myself giving you all the news as it comes out. And then later on in the day, Paul and Mary Jo will be coming to us live from Build along with Leo Laporte here in studio. And you're both going to come back for day two because we've got a keynote on day two. So you should probably cover that too, yes?
I'm sorry. Are you talking to us?
Probably not. He is. But, you know, day two, we have some important business in the evening. We have our meetup at Build.
Oh, yeah. So. Let's talk about that, please. The Pine Box Bar?
Pine Box Bar. So, Padre, this used to be a mortuary, this place.
That would explain the name, yeah.
The name is Pine Box, right. And so we were really lucky, thanks to Colleen Goldstein at Twit for hooking us up with this, because I was racking my brain trying to find us a place. Tuesday, 6 to 8 p.m., Pine Box Bar, which is walking distance from the convention center. They have excellent beer, food, cocktails.
Pizza, you all should sliders.
Come. No RSVP needed. Just show up. We'll all be there, 6 to 8.
There. It's good.
Look at the food.
We have a running gag here in Emmaus because there's a mortuary, and the guy's name is Grimm, which I think is hilarious. But the place itself looks like a coffee shop. And I've many times said, like, we should go grab a cup of coffee over there after we, you know, go to the farmer's market or whatever. And my wife has to tell me that it's a mortuary. So I actually think this is going to be a really comfortable place to have a drink.
Yeah, for sure. Peaceful, I think Alex has been there, I hear.
This place is excellent.
Hey, that's the endorsement I take.
Hey, Alex, how hard is it to get to this place from downtown Seattle? Do you remember?
From the convention center, it's like three blocks kind of up. Up
the walk.
Yeah, it's a
walk. Oh, so you can actually walk there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's on Pine Street, just across the freeway.
Yep. Oh, great. Okay, I was afraid it was going to be, you know, over by the stadiums, like kind of far away.
No. It's just walking distance.
Oh, good. Okay, that's good. Okay, that won't limit people's ability to get there then. That's good.
Well, Paul, Mary Jo, I do want to come back and talk a little bit about features that have been added or removed. We touched on that last week. And I also do want to talk about a little good news as far as market share of the last Windows 10 update is concerned. Can we do that when we come back?
Yeah. No, let's do it now. No, I mean, sure, yes.
No, Paul, come on, please. And seriously, though, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank a sponsor of this episode of Windows Weekly. And I have to start by asking a question. If you've ever gone for a mortgage before, did you like the experience? Did you like going into a bank and trying to prove that you were worthy of a loan? Did you bring a banker's box filled with old faded receipts and pay stubs? Did you think that you'd want to do it again? Well, probably not, because you're human and we don't like that. We want experiences that are up to date. We want experiences that represent where we are as a people, as a society, as a culture, and as a technologically advanced species. And the mortgage experience, well, it ain't that. At least it didn't used to be until Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Now, this episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Now, Quicken Loans understood that the mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Now, it's simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. No one's standing over your shoulder waiting for you to sign the documents. This gives you the time to look through all the fine print, all the potential options, and decide which one is for you. Now, it's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. That means no banker's box. It means that this works exactly like you would expect everything else to work in a digital society. Just click. Now, it's also powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in just seconds. And then with those calculations, based on your income, your assets, and your credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's just right for you. It's Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. That's rocketmortgage.com/windows. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states and MLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Windows Weekly. Oh, Mary Jo, I've heard that along with the parade that is 1803, there's been some features that have been added and a few that they've decided that we don't need anymore.
Yeah. You know, none of these on this list were that surprising to me. And in the past, when they've announced the deprecated feature list, there's always some you're like, wait, what? Right?
Yeah, like paint.
But this was things like Groove Music Pass. Yeah. We already knew, right? Like Groove, they basically did away with Groove. XPS Viewer, I don't know. Anybody surprised? Home Group, we already knew. They announced that back in December that would be going away. So none of these are like, what? Wait, what? But just normal list.
You know,
Groove, I think.
Groove was my favorite music player that would occasionally accidentally start up and I'd have to go, wait, when did I install that?
Yeah.
Did anyone ever use Groove? Paul? Mary Jo?
I did.
Really?
Yeah, no, we did. I mean, honestly, the irony or whatever of this situation is that Groove emerged as one of the few truly decent UWP apps, too, on Windows 10. It was kind of weird. Like, it's pretty good. Not anymore. I mean, now it's useless. But
Yeah,
I used Groove and Groove Music Pass for a while. My kids, I had my kids on this for a while and it was like torture for them. So they're on Spotify now.
I kind of miss a lot of things about Groove. I'm on Spotify too, but like there were some really good things about Groove. I never used their automated playlists or anything, but I liked how their art worked and how it was like, when we were back in the live tile era, how they kind of used some of the, what did they call that design language that they had then? Not Fluent, the thing before.
Metro?
Before. Yeah, Metro.
Like Metro.
Metro. I liked the Metro style and how they incorporated that throughout the app.
Yep.
I don't know. At the end, I started running into the case where I'd try to get a certain song and it would be like, oh, the artist didn't approve you to have this on there. And I was like, something's going to go down with Groove. That isn't going to be good.
Did we ever find out how many actually bought the Groove Music Pass?
Well, me and Mary Jo, and there was a guy from Sweden.
Paul's cat had a subscription. So.
Yeah.
He did. Mine did too.
There was a Christmas where you could get like a Zune Music Pass for $30, and I bought like five of them.
Yeah.
And I gave one to my kids each and extended mine out. And
I kind of miss. I had a chocolate Zune. I won it at one of these shows. And I kind of, I regret that I gave it away. It actually would be kind of fun to still have that thing.
The brown Zune. You are one of those people.
I think I still have my Zune. It's not brown, but.
I have mine. My blue one. Yep. I still have mine too.
I remember those years where everyone was making a media player. Everyone had some sort of media player.
Sure.
It seems so quaint now. Okay. What about the fact that. This last update actually did work. People actually did use it. Now you could argue that it's just because it's automatic and it forces you to use it, but 92% is nothing to sneeze at, right?
Yeah, and these are public facing, like app using computers out in the world. But when you compare it version over version, it's interesting. This release went out a lot faster, and then it reached a far bigger number of percentage of users before the next version was released. So I suppose that's probably not. I bet that's going to be the apex, right? It would probably go down for this version because a lot of those guys on 1709 are getting three.
Whoa!
Yep. The
chocolate Zune got him.
It did. He's all choked up.
H03 problem, I bet.
Oh,
Is your cat rubbing on your network cable?
No, I don't know what that is.
Oh, you're back.
There we go. There it is. There's been a disruption in the matrix.
You were saying?
I bet it's because I upgraded to 1803.
Actually, that could be. Yeah. You're having that audio sync problem again. We got to notice that it was a bandwidth problem. Temporary bandwidth problem. Now, can you repeat that? I don't want to miss any of my Therat wisdom.
What was the question? What was I talking about?
You were talking about market share.
Oh, no, just that I feel like 92% or whatever it is right now is going to be the apex, because the audience of people are going to be moving forward to 1803 is going to be those guys, right? It's not going to be a bunch of PCs on the previous release. It's going to be this group. So I bet this is the highest we're ever going to see for any Windows version.
I'd be interested to see some of the data on the older versions, especially those several generation older versions of 10 that are still running.
Yep. Why are they there?
How are they there?
Yep. Well, they're in businesses, right? I mean, I don't know what's going on. It's crazy that we have this many Windows 10 versions. It's just crazy.
Well, 100% of consumers have moved over because they had no choice.
Let's get the world on one version of Windows, which we will then create 17 versions of, and actually have a support matrix that's so complicated that no human being can figure it out.
Actually, I get it. Some people are keeping those older versions of Windows 10 because they cannot do without Groove.
Yes.
That's it.
Well,
you solved it.
The service is gone, so it's you're kind of on your own.
I didn't say they were using the service. I just really like the look of that app.
Yeah. Well, the app's still there. It just doesn't do anything anymore. Yeah. Or as much.
All right, let's talk a little bit about voice assistants, because there were some surprise stats that show that Cortana is actually the number two voice assistant in the world. And I actually couldn't believe that.
I literally don't believe it.
But it was with a very particular audience, wasn't it?
Right, yeah. They narrowed it down so that it's not the entire world. Yeah. It's just of a certain group of users. Cortana evidently is
the group of people who launch a voice assistant by mistake and then swear at the voice assistant. Cortana is number two with that group.
Cortana is still way above the Samsung voice assistant. So that's yes. This is good water.
Yep. Yeah, I think it was among business users or something like that that Cortana was number two, right?
But even that surprises me, because I would think more of them would be using Siri than Cortana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, number one by a mile, by all the miles, is still Amazon's voice assistants.
Yeah. Well, not surprising.
Now, let me ask you, here's the crazy question. Will Microsoft ever catch Amazon? And B, do they have to?
No.
Okay, good. to both?
No to the first question, or at least not in any way if you're measuring consumer penetration of it. But you guys probably remember this. Last summer, Microsoft and Amazon did this. I thought it was a surprise announcement where they said the two services were going to be integrated with each other so that you could use Cortana to talk to Alexa and Alexa to talk to Cortana. That was supposed to be out by now. In fact, it was supposed to be out by the end of 2017, and it's been nowhere in sight so far. Right. Every time you ask Microsoft, where is that thing? They're like, it's coming still. We're still doing it. It's on the book. So I thought maybe we would see them do this at Build. And then when I looked for sessions at Build that listed Cortana, there were very few. And I mean, that doesn't mean they won't do it there. They won't make the actual announcement there, but I'm skeptical. I feel like they're so far behind with Cortana right now in terms of number of skills that are available, in terms of what it can do, where it's integrated. I don't think they're ready.
But they need it, right? Really. Don't you think this is important?
They need it.
I mean, when you look at all of their AI initiatives and machine learning, et cetera, I mean, you need that data. You know, the thing that Alexa has, the thing that Google has, and even probably Siri to some degree, is just volume of queries and volume of data usage. And you need that. That's how you fine tune it. That's how it becomes valuable to the developers that are going to work against your services and to the people who are going to use those products ultimately. Yep. I'm surprised they're not more aggressive. Microsoft is uniquely positioned to do well in this market. And they just don't seem to be really going for it.
I know. They got way behind in terms of skills. They came out late with their skills kit. Then nobody started developing skills because everybody was out there doing it for Alexa instead. Yep. So I agree with you. They really need this integration to happen. I don't know when it actually will happen. In the interim, they've got, what's his name? Javier Soltero, who used to run Outlook, running Cortana. So that's good because he did a pretty decent job bringing Outlook to various platforms. So I think he is in kind of the mode right now of figuring out how can we kind of get back in the game. And he talked to PC World recently about it and hinted that they definitely have a plan, and their plan is more to, like what we've said on Windows Weekly, to put Cortana where people are. So more embedded in devices, embedded in Microsoft applications and third-party applications, than trying to catch up by having it be the voice on a mobile phone or on a speaker. I'm not sure how that's going to work or if it's going to work. Meanwhile, Alexa is now, Amazon's now doing Alexa for Business, which is right in Microsoft's wheelhouse, right, with what they're doing with Cortana. So I'm like,
I actually, you know I think the biggest story, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. No, I'm done. Yep. Go ahead.
It's interesting to me, you know, when Google entered this market forcefully with moving to the assistant and having the Google Home devices and everything, I think a lot of people kind of figured, and I certainly did, and I still believe it's possible that they're going to just run away with this market. It's so central to what they do. Mm-hmm. And yet, I think the most interesting story in this market over the past year has been Amazon's amazingly aggressive response to Google, and they really are just piling on the capabilities, the access points, the just the pervasiveness of their Alexa technologies. I mean, it's kind of amazing, because at the end of the day, I don't really feel like this is all that important to them. And it's the fact that this is, or you know, are central to their business or whatever. Their business being some multi-headed Hydra. Yeah. I mean, if they're
for retail, right?
And also maybe for the enterprise stuff too, you know, this notion that Amazon, you know, it's like Microsoft didn't have enough to worry about, you know, Google is this like cancerous force that is just going to eat markets because they can, is Microsoft's worst nightmare, except maybe they're not. This Amazon's, they're even more Google than Google, you know, the notion of an Amazon enterprise service of any kind a couple of years ago would have been laughable. And they're still, obviously, they're way behind. I mean, they're not even close. You know, Google, a G Suite type stuff is some tiny percentage the size of Office 365, et cetera, and Amazon's nowhere on that scale. But they are literally trying to be something for everybody. They're just, they're so aggressive. Nothing like them.
But that's not a long-term strategy. And something else here, which is, I think the battle for voice assistants ended last year at CES when everything was Amazon voice assistant enabled. And it just showed me like, okay, well, why even compete in that space anymore? But here's the thing. I don't think that actually matters to Microsoft, because Amazon may have the voice assistant market really kind of sewn up, and Google may have it on the phone. However, in terms of the impressiveness of the AI, no one is even close to Microsoft. Cortana is way better at doing things with data than any of the alternatives.
But this is a, you know, if a tree falls kind of situation. You have to, it doesn't matter if nobody uses it. And this is the thing. I mean, a year ago, not this past CES, but a year ago, Brad and I had that interview with the Cortana team and all the plans they had, and they have a long-term strategy, and we want Cortana to be where people are, and it has to be indispensable. It can't just be a nicety and blah, 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 whatever. And 15 months later, wherever we're at, now they're talking to PC World, they're telling the same story. Nothing has changed. Nothing has advanced. And like I said, you know, Amazon, which already controls this market, is going gangbusters.
Yeah.
You know, just look at what they've announced in the year. Just this year. It's crazy.
It's true. I think where we might hear from Microsoft at Build in this space is around what they have with Bot Framework, right? So this was something they announced, I think, at last Build. So I think it was then. This is how you build chatbots using their platform and their services. kind of think Cortana is going to become part of that, right? And Cortana isn't a bot, but it's going to play in there. And also, maybe you'll see something, you know, where Microsoft starts letting their bot framework build skills for the other platforms. I mean, that would make a lot of sense if that happened and kind of bring them back into more relevance.
So I'm with you.
Look at your face right now. I'm looking at your face and you're like,
I'm with Mary Jo. I think Microsoft is making a mistake in selling Cortana as a voice assistant. That's done. They're not going to make any inroads there. As an AI assistant, however, it's already in 365. It's already in Windows 10.
What message does this send if Cortana's primary use is as an Alexa skill?
Right.
You know, if you are just a tiny component of the market leading voice assistant or whatever, and maybe, yes, you are valuable in business situations. I'm sure that's why Amazon hooked up with Microsoft in the first place. I'm sure that the reason that Microsoft hooked up with Amazon was to get that volume going. I mean, to kind of help with that aspect of it. But I don't know. That doesn't seem like a winning strategy to me.
Well, I mean, once people see what Cortana can do for setting meetings, how it can organize my calendar, how it can actually look through my emails and tell me who I'm connected to and which connections I'm missing.
Yep.
I don't want a voice assistant for that. I honestly hate voice assistants. But if you build that intelligence
Want it to happen.
Want it to happen.
Yeah. This is a very googly kind of functionality, right? It's that perfect nexus of super useful and super creepy. I just got an email from American Express, for example. I don't have it in front of me now, but it said something to the effect of, your recent activity suggests that you might be flying soon. Yikes. That's not, I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want, what is that? I don't think people like that kind of thing. I mean, I know it's useful, right? Because I want to send people money, obviously.
I think people are less reticent now about that, or at least younger people, I think, are more accepting of that happening. Like for us, I think it's still kind of like, oh, wait, what? How, it's reading my email. Where's the Gmail man, right?
Gmail man, yes.
Right. Paul loved the Gmail man.
I did. I miss those days. Mark Penn, where are you now? Right. Wonderful bastard.
But you know what? I think Padre's onto something here, because what Cortana is versus these others is something different. Yet, it has to compete head-to-head with these other things too, right? So I don't think Microsoft wants to take voice out of the equation. They're going full steam ahead with putting voice in everything. I mean, Windows 10 April update has all this new voice dictation stuff built in. They're adding voice capabilities to Office apps now that's separate from what they're doing with Windows 10. So I know they're counting on voice as being one of the main new input methods that they have. So I don't think they're going to take it away.
Voice doesn't go away. It's like a touch on a laptop. You know, it doesn't matter if you use it. It's another way of doing it. And for some people, it's very natural. So there's no way it goes away. No, I don't think that. But the problem is just that Microsoft's kind of delivery vehicle for this technology is not very good. You know, Google has some size of the market just because 85% of phones are Android phones. It's right on there. You know, that's, I'm sure, part of the reason Samsung is doing Bixby is just to take that away from Google as much as they can. Siri, same thing, you know, with the iPhone. Microsoft has this, you know, kind of small market. I mean, I know it's hundreds of millions of computers. It shouldn't seem small, but compared to these other things, it's...
How often
disengaged
do either of you use any voice assistant, like screaming out into the room type stuff?
Only with the Harman Kardon. That's the only speaker. That's the only time I ever do.
Paul,
we have three Google Homes in our house, and we use them primarily for music.
Music,
right? Hey, you know, I want to listen to whatever it is, and my wife does that. She'll be cooking or whatever. You know, that's the primary function right now. I will also use it to not voice based, but if I want to play like a podcast, right? You can an Android Chromecast to the device. from the system and then play audible, and it plays out over the, you know, whatever the speaker might be. Like, I do that.
And for me, there's only one place. It's just my car. It's the only time I use a voice assistant.
Well, that's incredibly useful, though, right?
Right.
Honestly, as far as voice goes, my number one use of voice when it comes to like a technology device is for text messaging. I have to this day, I'm just fumble fingered on phones. Like I cannot type accurately on a phone at all. It's unbelievable. Like boop, 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 and you look up and it's like gibberish. And what I found is that I can just, you know, you hit the microphone button and you speak the text message and all of a sudden I can send text messages like a human being. And I actually find that to be really valuable. That has nothing to do with, you know, Cortana or voice activation or AI or whatever, I know. But as far as like, you know, using voice, which is kind of a natural user interface, I find that to be incredibly useful. It's conceivable that you could have a normal conversation with these things. If I could just walk in a room and say, hey, turn on the lights or dim the lights 70% or whatever the command was, and it just worked, you know, that would be great.
But 100% of the time, it has to work because there's nothing worse than
100% of the time
trying to re-trigger the voice assistant because it's not understanding you. That's just annoying.
You know, it's like the year the car came out, right? So the streets aren't designed for the vehicle you're driving. The thing breaks down all the time. No one else has one. There's no gas to be had anywhere. You know, and what that means in smart house terms for me is we have a handful of smart lights. We have some Google Assistant things going on. We could turn TVs on and do little baloney things with it. But I mean, the notion that somehow like turning to an app to turn a light on or off is easier than flicking a switch is ridiculous. And I also don't have most of my house is just dumb. It's just the way houses are. And it, you know, when it's, you sort of forget that it's smart because you're so used to doing the other stuff everywhere else. You know, my wife actually out in the, I'm pointing there cause you know exactly what's over there, in the living room, which I can see from my office, we have some smart lights in there. And my wife has consistently you know, she turns the lights off. She goes to bed and she leaves the light in there on. And I finally said, why don't you just turn that light off? I don't understand. You turn off every other light in the house except for that light. And she says, well, I thought you had to use an app. I said, it still has a switch, honey. You can just flick the switch. It's you know, but that's a disconnect. I mean, she's normal. I mean, what, you know, she's like kind of afraid of it a little bit or whatever. She doesn't want to go near it. I don't want to break anything.
See, that's the difference between Amazon and Microsoft. You yell at your Echo to turn lights on and off. You yell at Cortana and it's smart enough to say something like, you seem really stressed. Can I order you some cannabis?
Oh, it makes me crazy when Siri responds like that all the time. Like, you don't have to be mean about it. It's like, oh, is there something I could put my hands around right now? Because I can't stand the interactions I have with these things are almost always a mistake that makes me angry. That makes me have a second interaction with them. That makes me even angrier. It's like a non-virtuous cycle of abuse with technology. It's terrible.
Oh man, that was me today because I use the Harman Kardon to set timers all the time for cooking and errands and things. And so I set the timer. That's legit, the timer starts going off. It is, right? The timer starts going off. The cat starts freaking out because the timer's going off. So then I'm trying to get the timer to shut off by telling it to shut off. And then I'm yelling, shut up, Cortana.
You don't have to be mean about it. No, shut up. Why don't you listen?
And the cat is like, I'm like, oh, Lord.
Now, the first voice assistant that can understand cats and dogs, they win automatically.
Oh, no kidding.
Agree on that.
Right, so the dog could walk over to the dish and she kind of hits it with her foot, and that means she wants more water. And then Cortana could pipe up and say, hey, the dog's thirsty, let's go. You know, like that would actually be pretty useful. Yeah.
Although also very annoying.
That's right.
Yeah, potentially.
Every 5 minutes, the dog's thirsty. No, the dog is still thirsty.
Why is she talking? The dog's asleep, looking, you know, with her eyebrows going, what's going on?
Paul, when we come back, I'm very interested in your ideas on how Microsoft can actually save the store, because it's a great idea. It's just right now it's a little bit of a wasteland.
Not noticed that. What do you mean?
can we do that? Can I ask for your permission?
Absolutely.
Okay, fantastic. We'll do that in just a sec. But first, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank a sponsor of this episode of Windows Weekly. Now, we, because we're all tech-savvy people, understand that you have to have a presence on the internet. I mean, it's how you sell yourself. It's how you sell your business. It's how you make sure that people know what it is that you do, what it is that you create, and the art or the profession that you want to show everyone on the internet. Now, if you're going to do that, it's all about making sure that you can spend time on the things that you're good at and everything else gets taken care of, which is why we are so happy to have WordPress as a sponsor of Windows Weekly. Now, Windows Weekly is all about making your life easier, and so is WordPress. If you visited our site, then you know that it's the center of our presence online. It reflects who we are and what we stand for. Now, we use WordPress.com because it gives us the freedom and the flexibility to share our voice, our work, our way of doing things. It makes our site our own when we build it on WordPress.com. Now, you don't need to do the coding or design. WordPress provides all the tools that you need to get your site up and running. If you're concerned because you're not a programmer, don't be. You can focus on your content, on your art, on the things that you're creating, and let WordPress handle all the design. Now, their customer support is there 24/7 to help. That's Monday through Friday and weekends too. WordPress offers powerful e-commerce options, ranging from the simple and the effective buy button that we've all seen to complete online stores. Now, prices start at just $4 a month, and when you're ready to expand your business's online reach, WordPress makes it easy with built-in SEO, social sharing, and specialized plugins to meet your needs. Now, 30%, think about that, 30% of all websites in the world run on WordPress, and there's a reason. Because it's responsive, because it's so easy to use, because it's beautiful. Now, we want you to get your own piece of the web, and you can get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. Just go to wordpress.com/windows to create your website. That's wordpress.com/windows for 15% off your brand new website, wordpress.com/windows. And we thank WordPress for their support of Windows Weekly. Now, Paul, I actually like the idea of a Windows store. I really do, but there's just been nothing in there for me. How do we fix it?
The way we fix it is a direction I think Microsoft is heading in, right? The original point of this thing is we're going to bring this mobile app experience, we're going to put it in Windows for some reason. I think the theory was that we were going to move to these touchy-feely devices, we were going to have tablets instead of computers, and that obviously never happened. I mean, there's some percentage of people that do that. And then, of course, the phone platform failed completely. But we're still kind of stuck with this kind of childish, unprofessional, mobile-oriented app store and app experience. And I think that's the mistake. I think the way forward for Microsoft is to just embrace the desktop and to do it in a way that respects its needs for the future, which are better reliability, better performance, and better security in Windows overall. And what they want to do is eradicate desktop technologies, but what they should be doing is just containing it. And so, you know, we have if you think about, not games, because games are an exception, although games fall into the same general bucket where they're not UWP apps. But if you just look at applications, the best apps in the store are desktop apps, right? They're things like Spotify or I almost said iTunes, not iTunes, but things like Spotify that are not iTunes, you know, because they're actual desktop apps that have been, you know, put into a UWP container, and they may or may not access native UWP features. They don't have to, but they can. I think that's the right approach. And I think that's what people on Windows expect. And the reason I think that is because I use a Windows computer and no one is using these apps. I mean, I know some people use Mail and Calendar and things like that, but there are no great high-profile success stories in the UWP space. So, you know, just embrace what you have. And personally, what I'd like to see, one way to do it is, you know, right now we have developer buy, and you have to basically, as the developer of an app, put your app in the store and do the work to turn it into a desktop bridge app. I feel like Microsoft has the technology to automate this, and that the way to protect a system and a user is to look at the downloads as they occur, automatically put it in some kind of a container, and sandbox it from the rest of the system and just move the whole thing forward. You know, you can still plot this goal that, you know, you want to deprecate and probably, I don't think they can eliminate, but deprecate Win32 and other desktop technologies. And this is one of the ways, you know, that you can do it. just because I maybe I want the security and the reliability and the performance of something like Windows 10S, but I definitely want the application compatibility part of it as well. And we have the solution today. The limiting factor is that it requires the developer to say yes.
I love that.
Microsoft controls the platform. They could make it a requirement.
I mean, this idea of everything that comes to the store gets put into a sandbox, gets put. I mean, we've already got the hypervisor built into Windows 10. Why not use it for something like this? And, to be honest, right now, the store looks kind of like my first app store. It looks like the Amazon Fire app
store. It's a Play School app that has nothing to do with the Photoshops and the Microsoft offices of the world. And I find that to be very strange. The Mac App Store has not been particularly successful, but those are Mac apps, right? I mean, they've done something to, to make them, safer, more reliable, whatever it is. But they've not changed the technology of the underlying, apps on the Mac. I can't speak to the success of this venture I'm describing. I mean, the Mac App Store suggests whatever. But coincidentally today, I reset the MacBook Air that I have back to Mavericks, which is hilarious. But then you upgrade it to Mac OS High Sierra. And it's kind of an interesting reminder of a couple of things that are really different on the Mac, because the Mac by default will prompt you not to run stuff that you download from the web. And you can bypass it, because you're an adult. But in some cases, you have to you probably know more about this maybe, but you control click on it and then you can open it, and it goes into an exception list because, again, you're an adult, you're the user, you get to do that. And it's interesting that Apple provides a more adult response to this stuff might be unsafe. We don't know the publisher. They're typically more parental than Microsoft. They typically kind of act on behalf of the user in ways that I find to be a little smothering. But in this case, they're treating it, I think, the way that they should and the way that Microsoft should as well.
It's role reversal.
It's a little strange. It's a little strange. Apple may or may not be working to bring, iOS technologies to the Mac and whatever, and it kind of doesn't matter. But I can assure you that when and if that happens, those apps, those iPad apps running on a Mac will look professional. Like they have reached that kind of what I think of as command density, where they can have complex toolbars of options and lots of stuff going on. But if you look at the UWP apps that are in the store, there are these giant, giant circle buttons because they have to be big enough for a gorilla's thumb or something. I don't know why they're so big, but there are these giant, UI elements. And UWP, I don't think is ever going to take off. But if they're serious about this, the side effort that needs to occur is to make UWP more apt for professional applications. That you should be able to develop and create a command dense application. You should be able to duplicate Adobe Photoshop or Microsoft Word 2016 or whatever you want to pick, something that has a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And right now I don't think you can without, jumping through some hoops.
No, you can't. Right now if you try to make a UWP Adobe Premiere, it would look more like iMovie because you can't have the command density you need for a real nonlinear editor. Right. Mary Jo, what do you think? Is this the way to save the store, to actually make it useful to most of us?
Maybe. I don't know how you can save the store. They've been trying since Windows 8 to figure out how to fix the store, improve the store, get rogue apps out of the store. And nothing they've done has really changed anything. Now, now they're selling stuff like hardware and TV shows and movies and, everything basically in the store.
Except music.
Except music. Right. Yeah. Good point.
It's kind of random.
It is random. Do you think, Paul, do you think that MSIX packaging effort that they talked about recently and that they're going to talk a lot about at Build, do you think that will do anything for what kinds of apps come into the store and how?
I think we're moving to this. I really do. I don't have any information about this actually happening, but they've had, they've had application virtualization technology for 15 years, maybe. I mean, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
I think there's a bunch of kind of things converging that makes this possible. As far as, this like saving the store, the truth is that the underlying concern is still the same. The problem is the same, which is that there is no new app development on Windows anyway, right? I think one of the points of making a mobile app development platform was that they would attract the developers who are making those apps elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And that has not worked. You know, the ability to bring
PWAs
existing
in there. Right. PWAs will help. Right.
That's probably that's going to help. But, you know, if users want, the two examples I come up with are actually in the store, but, you know, full blown Adobe Photoshop, whatever. I don't know. I as a user should be able to run whatever I want. You know, if Microsoft wants to protect me and Windows and every other Windows user, I think it's up to them to put that into Windows. Like whatever the actual technology is, it should be, you know, instead of making me bend over backwards to find a stupid app in the store that's sort of like the app I really want to run, why don't you just figure out a way to make that app run safely in Windows? Like, you can't do that, like, what are we doing here?
I mean, the reason they were driving everybody to the store, I mean, app safety is one reason, right? But it was also for making sure things get updated in a regulated way and in a timely way, I guess, too. But also, I think it was the ultimate idea was monetization for Microsoft, too. I mean, they take a cut of what's in the store, right? So
for sure,
they want things to go through the store, even if it's the Windows Store for Business. You know, they want people to be using the store as the distribution mechanism and not just be randomly downloading things, even if you can do it safely in a VM.
I
don't know.
You're right. I mean, I can't save the store. What I'm trying to do is make it useful for me and for users, right? Which may not be what Microsoft wants because they wouldn't benefit from it. It would be really nice for me. You know, one of the things I like about the store is you can get in and see the list of the applications you've previously installed or purchased. Mm-hmm. And so I can go through that list. It's a little, you know, it's just you can't even sort it, but I can go through and say, oh, there's Photoshop Elements. I want that. And then actually I'm done because I don't want anything else from the store. But it would be really neat if it worked better and I could go in and say, well, I want Gmail and Google Calendar and I want, you know, and I could have this, I could create like a little package, like a little playlist of apps and say, you know, I have this new computer I just brought online, click this and install all of that stuff. There's some neat functionality that would be enabled just by the store being popular, you know. Mm-hmm. But does that help Microsoft? No, because they're not making 30% of anything on any of the stuff I just described. And I just don't think new apps on Windows are ever really going to happen. PWAs might be the closest we get to that situation.
So here's what I got in my store right now. So I just brought it up. I've got a bunch of movies that are either free or cheaper on Amazon Prime. I've got a bunch of apps I would never install in a million years.
Cooking Fever is probably pretty good.
Which one?
Cooking Fever.
Okay, are you messing with me?
Yeah, totally. That looks ridiculous. But
no, this is what I really want. The 50,000 versions of Mahjong that are in the store.
Sure.
I mean, look at this. It's a wasteland. Yeah. There's nothing in here that I want.
So there's two areas that are actually pretty decent in the Microsoft store. One is if you go to scroll down one bit more and there's like an Xbox logo, the Xbox Live games section is pretty high quality. There's some really good stuff in there. And the one thing I really like about, we're not really seeing a lot of it there, are we? Well, no, there are some really good games in there. And of course, they also have a side strategy with Xbox where Microsoft first-party games are Xbox Play Anywhere. They can work on the Xbox One as well. When you buy the game on one, you get it on the other. You can go back and forth. I really like that. I said there were two. What was the other one? There's only one. My mistake.
It's gaming.
No, I mean, if you use Microsoft.
And gaming.
Yeah, pretty much games. I mean, I would never buy books from the store.
No.
Ever. I would never buy movies from the store, although renting them is fine. If that's how you want to watch movies on your laptop, whatever, that's cool. There's a UX thing going on there at the top, which drives me crazy, where you have kind of a camel case thing going on.
Yeah.
Where the movies are tall and the games are short or whatever. That's kind of weird. But if you use Microsoft Edge, obviously this is a place to go to get Edge extensions. There's no way to find this, but there is a little page in there somewhere for PWA apps, which is not fantastic, which is kind of depressing. No, it's this.
Oh, Subway's got a PWA app. Fantastic.
Yes, they do.
I'm good. That's it. That's sold the store for me.
Yep.
Wow, this is kind of depressing, actually. I feel bad for Microsoft now.
But what, you know, okay, I haven't looked at the Apple Store in years, but I mean, when you look at the front of the Apple Store, is there anything useful or compelling?
No, the Apple Store is not that great.
No.
It really isn't.
And that's what I'm thinking. I like, it's just endemic of stores, right? That this
well,
is kind
of
what
endemic
you get.
Of stores on desktop, right? The mobile app store on iOS or Android is full of stuff. I mean, in fact, it's too much stuff. Yeah. It makes it hard to find things. Yeah, if you want a 20-year-old Tomb Raider game, let me recommend the Mac App Store. You're going to love that place. there are 1,300 different text editors. There's weird demographic stuff going on there with the Mac thing. But I think Mac users, by and large, probably are like Windows users in the sense that they're very comfortable going to google.com/Chrome or whatever and grabbing the apps that they need from the web. You know, like I said, I just brought this laptop up. I mean, I spent a bunch of the time. I went to Office 365, grabbed that. I got Teams from the business version. I got Skype from that website. Some of that might be in the store. I don't know. But I just go.
There's
I just
still not
you
a
know,
Teams
I do what I always do.
Client. There's still not a Teams client in the Microsoft Store.
Right. And yeah, that's true. There is obviously a Teams client, but it's not in the store.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yep. They're waiting until they release their PWA app.
Probably.
Yeah.
That's our guess.
And which will
I don't want to get off
on
a
week.
Rant here, but I've been using Microsoft Teams for the past couple of weeks at work. And I got to tell you, I wish to do physical harm to the people that created this app. It is really terrible.
Yikes. Really?
It's really terrible. Yeah, it's frustratingly terrible.
I did an in-depth use because I have a team. I have a new communications team in my new job. And I wanted to put us all on the same communications platform. And I thought, oh, Teams, this would be perfect. And about 3 hours in, I wanted to hurl my computer out of
it. Let me give you three examples of why this app is a dumpster fire. The most obvious one is that it's a single screen, a single window app.
Yep.
And one of the things that's really nice about Skype is I can have I have this window up where we're talking in a video. And I can have another window over here where that has my contacts and I get conversations going on. They're all separate. In Teams, like the modern Skype app, it's one thing. You kind of switch back and forth. I hate that. But we have I do a podcast with Brad, and we have our notes in OneNote, which you can embed in Teams, but you can't see it. You can't see the link for it in the chat window. You have to go outside of the chat window, which is only one window. It's a ridiculous bit of navigation that is just unbelievable. But the single worst thing about Teams maybe is that, you know, imagine you do this with Skype, you bring up Skype, you want to make sure it's set to the right microphone, the right camera, and the right speakers. In Skype, you go to tools options, I'm sure. Yep. And I just froze myself like an idiot. Anyway, there it is. To do this in Teams, you have to start a video chat. That's the only place those controls are available from. Mm-hmm. So you have to start talking to somebody who can't hear you because you're on the wrong devices or see you, and then fix it then. That's how that works. Mm. It's crazy. Mm. All it has done is introduced a new level of complexity.
I haven't tried it because I'm an office of one, but I should try it with you guys.
don't.
You should.
Don't.
Well, you would. You'll
save
hate
yourself.
It. It's
I mean,
everything that's wrong about Skype with a bunch of new wrong stuff.
No, exactly. That's what it is. I saw it. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just Skype. This is everything I hated about the new version of Skype. But for enterprise,
but I mean, this is their
but
future.
Even worse,
if you said to me, what's Microsoft's future for Office 365? I would say they're building everything around Teams. That like Teams is their future.
Yeah. Me too. And then I used it and I thought, what's Hangouts need again? Because I think I'm going to look at that now.
Yeah, no, I was very disappointed. I was incredibly disappointed.
Really?
I can't believe how terrible it is.
Wow. Because most of the people I've heard from, they've had a lot of critiques of it. And, you know, they're like, you know, it's still early days, blah. But I've never heard anybody just say, I absolutely hate it.
Oh, talk to Brad. He'll tell you exactly the same. It drives all of us insane.
The UI is atrocious.
Yeah, UI is bad.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how bad it is because they had Skype to build off of. You know, what did we get right? What did we get wrong? And then you kind of go from there. I mean, it seems like an easy thing to fix. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, not so much. Not so much.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
It's as if somebody said, "Hey, you know what? When you're using Teams, that's the only thing you're going to be doing."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever you're doing in Teams is the only thing you're going to be doing.
Yeah. Stop it.
So, you know, like Skype, the desktop application, which is really hard to get now. If you switch to another application, like if I just click on the desktop, a little preview window comes up.
Right.
And it's a separate window and you can position it, mm-hmm. you know, in the screen. So I could be reading a document, talking to you guys, and I can do both of these things at the same time. In Teams, that little window is in it's in the application. I'm stuck mm-hmm. in it. You know, it's like a little prison. Microsoft Teams. For you folks that wanted to go to North Korea but couldn't afford the airfare, Microsoft Teams. I don't know.
Okay. No, let's move on to something a little nicer than that. And that is Office 2019, which I understand is kind of built around Teams, but there's more than just that, right, Mary Jo?
There is. Yeah. So Office 2019 is the next on-prem version of the Office apps and the servers. For people who thought Microsoft was going to end it with 2016 and it will be cloud only, no, that was not the way they went, because a lot of people still want to use the on-prem version. As of this week, Monday, I believe, they began testing, or maybe it was last Friday, they began testing the first apps that are going to be part of Office 2019. And these are all client apps that they're testing. The Win32 versions of Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, OneNote. Well, the OneNote one is an exception. That's actually a UWP app. But also Publisher, Access, Project, Visio. All those things are available to test if you are a commercial customer. And I'm not exactly sure how much they're really enforcing that limitation. They told me there's not going to be a consumer test of these apps. It's going to be only business customers that they're looking for to test them. If you're wondering about the server versions like Exchange, SharePoint, Skype for Business, Project, Server, all of those are going to be also available to test for business customers only in, quote, the next few months. If you're looking for the Mac version of Office 2019, that will be also available to testers in the next few months. So these are what they call the perpetual client versions of Office. So they're not Office 365.
Right,
they're not something you pay for on a subscription basis. This is where you buy it one time and you install it and that's it.
I'm all about that, by the way.
Yeah.
Really?
So if you want to test it, get in there. Get in there, Padre.
Well, I mean, because I have to admit, my Office 2007 is long in the tooth.
Jeez. Yikes. How's home and student treating you?
It was the ribbon. I hated the ribbon, but yeah. I think I'm over
that
now.
Hate.
unfortunately, my new office, we are all 365, so I will probably be using 365. But I love.
But why don't you like that? But with Office 365, it downloads the apps for you to use locally. It's just how you pay for it, right?
Right. Right. The functionality is fine. I'm actually a big fan of the Office.
Yeah.
Either of them. Philosophically, I like to have on-prem. I'm a big fan of that. That's why I'm still using old versions of the Adobe suite, because I do not want to do a subscription version.
Mm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that's a me thing. That's a me thing.
Right. So the other thing to know about the on-prem version, Padre, if you care, so you know you're going to be behind what the Office 365 people get. So the version Office 2019 of Word is not going to be as up to date and have all the features, especially things that require cloud connection, as you will if you had Office 365 version.
Can I type in it?
You can.
Can I format?
You can type in Notepad too.
Will it correct my spelling errors?
I believe it will.
I'm cool.
Yeah.
I'm honestly. That's really. Yep. I don't. Office 2007 to Office 2019, I'm not expecting a whole lot of crazy feature updates that I'm going to use on a daily basis.
Oh, yes. Okay. I was interested in what you were going to say there, because actually there are a whole bunch of crazy feature updates.
Great,
but then you said that I'm going to use on a daily basis, and you're probably correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Like here's an example. So Outlook, right? Outlook 2019 is, here's what you don't have in Outlook if you are using like Outlook 2016, I didn't even realize you didn't have this. Support for Office 365 groups. You're going to get that with Office 2019, but you don't have it in Office 2016, I guess. Updated contact cards. And for people who like it, I hate it, Focused Inbox also will be added. Coming soon to Office 2019. Focused Inbox. No.
The very first thing I turned off on my Outlook for Android was that Focused Inbox. And when it asked me to make a review, you know, I was like, okay, sure.
This is a typical Microsoft. This goes way back to the, hey, it looks like you're trying to write a letter kind of thing they used to do. It's well-intentioned, right? What the dialogue should say is, hey, would you like to miss some of your important emails? Click yes. And we'll turn on Focused Inbox. And we'll put those emails somewhere that's not in the inbox. It's somewhere. It's over here. It's like another thing you have to click on.
Hey, would you like me to hide an email that you just read but don't want to be able to find in the next 30 minutes?
Yeah, I would like that. Know. Thank you.
That was my favorite part of that.
Crazy. Yeah. Yep. But some people love it and they swear by it and they think it's like the best thing ever.
So. And they did give me a way to turn it off. So thank you very much. I mean, I that's not sarcastic again. Thank you, because
Microsoft Outlook itself is like, I need to go to the corner store to get a gallon of milk. I'm going to pull the battleship out of the harbor there, turn this thing around 180 degrees, chug out to the store. it's like this giant thing. Messaging has been solved, guys. Why does it have to be so humongous?
Yeah,
I don't know. It's very strange.
It's like you kind of nailed the UI a while back. Just stay with it. It's cool, man.
Agree.
And by the way, as far as the ribbon goes, you mentioned that you hate the ribbon. You're sticking on 2007 for that reason. I don't know if we talked about this. I feel like I talked about this recently. But, back in the day when they announced this, I think it was at PDC before it was Office 2010, I think was the first version. They only had partial app support. Outlook didn't get it in the first version, I think. I gave Microsoft a lot of credit for kind of rethinking something that most people thought was done, Office productivity software, that there was nowhere to go with this. And they had reached the point with the ludicrous numbers of toolbars and menus and, how do you expose all of this functionality to the user? But it is perhaps telling that I and actually Mary Jo do not use Microsoft Word to write. And I won't speak for her, but one of the reasons I don't is just because it's so heavy, It's such a big thing for such a simple thing to do, I just want to write words. I apply a handful of styles, bold and italics. I use hyperlinks. I like to use headings. I don't have to in the document. It doesn't matter, but I like it. And that's about it, The other 99% of that UI is completely useless to me and just gets in the way. And, the one thing that the mobile versions of Office kind of got right to me was it's a much more of a streamlined user interface, big buttons, which I don't like, but more of a toolbar kind of a thing. And I don't want to go into Office and spend an hour and a half removing stuff, and configuring UIs and whatever, especially since Microsoft doesn't sync any of that stuff anywhere. So if I do it once, I have to go do it again on some other computer in the future. It's just too much.
That's why we need Cortana. You could put all the commands in Cortana and make her look like Clippy.
Yeah,
and everything would be fine.
We can use the new dictation feature to write our articles.
Hey, it looks like you've misspelled a word. Would you like me to correct it?
Hey, it looks like you're trying to write an article about Microsoft.
Would you like me to delete it?
Right. Would you like me to copy and replace for Apple?
I notice you've turned on the phone on your phone. Would you like me to start up Microsoft Teams instead?
Yep. That's what it does on your PC. That's the other thing. The stupid thing starts every time my computer boots, and it's not in the startup group. Yeah. Why?
I was looking for the setting for that. I'm like, okay, no,
you can't stop
there
it.
There isn't one?
No.
Really? There might be, but I
gave up. I've never seen it. If there is, I'd love to know about it. This thing makes me crazy. I hate this thing.
Oh, boy.
Let me say this. Actually, I'm sorry. Let me say one nice thing about Microsoft Teams. There is one thing it does right that Skype doesn't do right. Right now, we're in a Skype we are having a conversation. We're literally interacting on video. And if you go into the Skype contact list and you look at your profile at the top, it says, my status is available. That's ridiculous. I am not available. Mm-hmm. I am chatting on video with other people. I should be marked as busy. And that's one thing that Skype, that Teams does correctly. If you have a video call or a phone call or whatever you want to call it with someone else, you are busy. And isn't so other that, people see you as busy. Like that's the one mode? Thing I got right.
Hmm? Isn't that focused mode?
That's focused, yes. It's focused chat.
I just realized we're running out of time. I did not look up at the clock. Holy cow. Is it okay if we leave a lot of this for next week's episode? It'll give you a head start on the dog.
We can race to the end for sure.
Yeah. You know, we don't really need to talk about earnings. All you can say is cloud, good. They're doing good with the cloud. Done.
Also, I just want to point out that commercial cloud, still not a business.
Right.
Cloud good, commercial cloud bad.
Commercial cloud is probably good. It's just, Microsoft has 127 metrics that they use, and they cherry pick the ones they want, and they call that thing commercial cloud. Even though there's no such business, it's like, we'll take a little bit from here, a little bit from here.
Except,
now we compare to AWS.
Doesn't Dynamics 365 fit into commercial cloud? And that's Paul's favorite product, right?
What just happened?
Look, we always make fun of Mary Jo and the Xbox. This was your turn.
You do. Yeah.
All right. You know what? Let's get to the tips and picks because I don't think we can do a show without those. We've got, this must be Mary Jo because it's about Xbox games. So Mary Jo, you want to give your great set of games?
There's games with gold.
Yep. Actually, that's pretty accurate.
And
Paul, what are these?
You're not selling it, Mary Jo. Let me help. Okay. It's the beginning of May, so obviously there are four more games in Games with Gold available this month, two now and then two later. But the bigger thing to look at, I think, is the Xbox Game Pass games, right? So this is the subscription service that Microsoft has. They have over 100 games in the system, and one of the new things they're doing is that when new first-party games come out on day one, they become part of Xbox Game Pass. So State of Decay 2 is coming out, not today, but sometime in the next week or so. And the day that that new game is available, this is one of the zombie games, it will be available to Xbox Game Pass subscribers. So the tip here, I guess, such as it is to you might want to, if you're an Xbox One guy, gal, you might want to examine Xbox Game Pass if you haven't already. It's incredible value. It's really, really neat.
And these are all Play Anywhere, yes?
all of them. Not in Xbox Game Pass. Okay. But the first-party stuff from Microsoft typically, is. And is State of Decay 2? I don't know, actually, off the top of my head. But if it's for Microsoft Studios, I would guess that it is.
And we have app pick of the week?
Yeah. Apple released iTunes for Windows 10 last week. Do not install or get this app, please. It is a horrible, horrible, horrible thing. Instead, what you should get is Twitter for Windows 10. Because Twitter, this is the PWA we were talking about. It's still, unfortunately, the one major example of a great PWA. The reason it's great on Windows 10 is that they are taking advantage of native Windows 10 features and will be taking advantage of more as we move forward. The Twitter app in Windows before this had been kind of lagging behind functionally. For example, if you're running an older version like Windows 8.1 and you get the app from that store, it doesn't even support the new higher character count, that Twitter implemented last year. I don't know. So this is a thoroughly modern version of Twitter, which is great. You can get to it on the web if you want to. If you can just use it in your browser, it's mobile.twitter.com. But the Windows 10 app, the PWA version, supports, like I said, live tiles. It supports notifications, and it supports jump lists in the taskbar. They're going to be adding more native features. They did a little blog post about it. Like, here's where we're at. Here's what we intend to do. There's going to be like a night mode thing coming and some other features. It's a great app. I mean, I've been using this through Chrome for, I don't even know how long, since last year at some point. And as PWAs have become a thing, it has kind of emerged as my go-to example of how this stuff could work. It's a simple app for sure, but the Windows 10 version is now in the store. So if you get Windows 10 version 18.03, which by my estimation everyone is getting, I guess the floodgates are just open. If you have Windows 10, you're going to get it. This will be the app version you get when you go to the store. It's pretty good.
Which, by the way, this is the one that you're talking about. So this is the Twitter app for Windows 10, which looks exactly like the web page. It's not bad.
But it's responsive, right? So I like to use Twitter in a single column view. So if you were to make that window, like restore the window, and so it's not maximized, and then drag it so that it's skinny, you will get a more streamlined, yeah, like drag it over. Like, see how it kind of.
There you go.
Yeah.
So nice. that's your Twitter experience. You just have that on locked to the side of the window at all times.
Yep.
Okay, not bad. All right. I'll definitely take that over anything with iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes is a crime against humanity. Have I explained the problem with iTunes?
I don't think you've been clear enough, though. You have to be really decisive here.
It's like they sent a robot back in time to kill humans.
Okay.
It's terrible.
That's pretty decisive. All right, fantastic. Mary Jo, an enterprise pick of the week.
Yes. So I don't know how many of our listeners try to find things on Microsoft websites. We do this as our profession, and it's really tough. There used to be a site called blogs.office.com where you could go for anything you wanted to see about news around Office. That no longer exists as of this week. It now is the Microsoft 365 blog, which is good and bad. If you care about Microsoft 365, it's handy. If you want to find out stuff about Office, it's horrible because it's all kind of mushed in there with other stuff that you don't care about. So here's my alternative for you, tech community blogs. To find this, go to tech community. Make sure I give you the right thing. Techcommunity.microsoft.com. At the top of that page, there's a blogs tab. If you click on the blogs tab, you miraculously get all your Office information. You get separate blogs on things like Excel, Teams, Forms. Even Cortana has a blog. Microsoft To Do has a blog. Very handy if you care about Office-related stuff and you don't care so much about things like Intune or Windows. Although there is a Windows blog on here too. Windows IT Pro just moved here I believe.
Every month, the Microsoft guys do that Office 365, here's what we did this month post. It was impossible to keep track of.
I know.
Yeah.
They released like 1,000 updates every month. But now they've added in the rest of Microsoft 365. It's crazy.
I know. Yeah. So go to Tech Community blog instead. And unfortunately, I don't think they have an RSS feed. I've requested one from them because I think that would make my life way easier. But for now, even just go to the site and you can find out a lot of things about all the latest on Office.
Interesting.
And actually, I'm excited about this one. We get a second enterprise pick of the week. And this is actually a problem that I am dealing with right now. So thank you very much.
Okay. Very cool. So Microsoft Garage, which is their incubation effort, they come up with a lot of different projects there done by employees. Some of them succeed and go on to become commercial products. Some do not and just get destroyed, wiped out. There's a new project on the Garage called the Fast Data Transfer Tool. And the idea of this is to help you quickly upload data into Azure, up to 4 terabytes per hour from a single client machine. So it sounds pretty interesting. They don't do a lot of enterprise tools over in the Garage. I can't tell you how it works. I haven't tried this, but they talk about moving your data from your premises to blob storage, to a clustered file system, or directly even into an Azure VM. So it's free. You can go try it out. The only caution, again, is it may not continue to exist. Sometimes these cool Garage projects just disappear. So don't get too dependent on it. Yeah.
Well,
don't get too dependent. But if it's successful, it'll be commercialized probably.
I'm just finishing development on a sort of a content repository, a video content that can be shared between all of our global offices. And getting the data into Azure was not doing well.
Not easy, right?
Yeah. If I can get this kind of throughput, that actually would fix everything. So thank you.
I know. You're welcome. Try it out.
Now, for the beer pick of the week, I was a little surprised because, Mary Jo, you found a beer that was made out of oysters. Was that it?
Yes. Yes, I did. It's actually not as surprising as it sounds. Really? I decided to do a Seattle beer pick since we're going to be in Seattle next week. And there's a brewery in Seattle called Machine House. And they're unusual because they're not like many of the typical Seattle breweries that are heavy on IPAs and super hoppy stuff. They make English style, beers, which are usually lower in alcohol and easier to drink many of without having to stagger away. So they've got a beer called Machine House Oyster Stout, and it is brewed with Hood Canal oysters. So that it sounds really weird, but there are a lot of oyster stouts. All it does is it just gives it a little bit of salt in the stout, and it actually tastes like a little bit briny, like a briny-ish stout. Not super salty, but just like a nice little undertone of brine. I think you would like it if you drank beer.
Someone once gave me a Clamato and told me it tasted just like a V8. It did not taste just like a V8.
No, it tastes like
a V8 if you drink it in the ocean.
That's right. It tastes like a V8 if you fell into, you know, the Pacific.
Yeah, into like Boston Harbor or something.
This is not like that. This has just a very, very subtle hint of brine. Like if you didn't know oysters were in it, you wouldn't be like, oh, this tastes like oysters. No.
Could you get like a chunky version that actually had oysters in it?
You ruined it, Paul. You ruined it.
I like oysters.
I don't know if you could, but yeah, oysters are good. I'm not sure I'd want a beer with oysters floating in it, though.
He's like, oh, God.
That sounds like a specialty drink that you get when you're already drunk.
It kind of does.
You go to like a seafood restaurant in Boston. You get like you get oysters in a half shell and then oyster stew. And then you get like oyster fried shooters. Oysters. Oyster shooters, of course.
So, Mary Jo, this is available at Pine Box, apparently.
It is.
That's amazing.
That's why I chose it, in case it's still on when we go. Maybe we can have it there.
So everyone who comes for the meetup, you have to have at least one oyster stout. And then report back. Report back and tell us.
Mary Jo, they also have Old Rasputin on Nitro, which is one of my favorite stouts.
Oh, man, that's going to be great. Are you coming? Are you going to come to our meetup?
No, I'm not.
He's going to be working, working on Google I.O.
Oh, right.
Oh, that's how
that
it is.
That show.
So have one of those stouts for me, please.
They had to put them on the same week. For those who have stayed for the entire episode, remember next week will be a little strange. We are not doing the show on Wednesday. We're going to be doing it on Monday evening. It'll be live with Leo Laporte and the two of these people over at Build.
Those two guys.
3 p.m. Pacific.
That's right.
3 p.m. And Pacific.
The morning of, so 8:30 a.m. Pacific time, we're going to be starting our coverage of the Microsoft Build keynote, the first keynote, which is going to be the best keynote, really. Then the following day, I believe we're doing I.O. stuff. So it's going to be a full week of keynotes and conferences next week.
Lots of dev stuff.
Yeah. Well, Paul, Mary Jo, it's been an absolute pleasure once again. I always enjoy doing the show. This is probably going to be the last time I get to co-host this before I leave the network.
I've told my wife about your Vatican thing.
Invitation.
I can confirm that you will be seeing us in Italy or in the Vatican.
Fantastic.
I don't know when.
I have a few decent restaurants for us to eat at because the food in the house is...
Sure.
Mary Jo, will you join us?
Chef Boyardee.
I would love to.
We have a lot. You can't bring your cat, but we have a lot of feral cats. So
that'll be fun.
That'll kind of work out. Of course, Paul Theroux. He is at Theroux.com. Paul, any interesting articles that we should know about or upcoming reviews? Of course, you're going to be bringing back a lot of news from Build. But what should people be expecting?
Short term, focused on Build. I mean, like I said earlier, you know, Mary Jo and I both are, you know, will always, I mean, pay a lot of attention to what they're saying. But this year in particular, because of what's going on with Windows, I'm very, very interested in how all this stuff is going to be presented. So that's going to be my focus.
Fantastic. And Mary Jo, you pilot ZDNet's All About Microsoft blog. What do you have coming? Of course, there's going to be Build news, but what's got you excited?
Yeah, I'm actually excited Xbox. About the Build news. Xbox, not so much. Build, yes. I'm curious what they say there about Microsoft 365. I think we're going to start. This is where the ramp up of this push is going to start. Yep.
Well, the two of you travel safe. I'm sure you're going to have fun next week and bring us all the best news from the conference. That's it for this episode of Windows Weekly with Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley. Don't forget that usually, not next week, but usually you can catch the show live on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific time. Watch it on demand at twit.tv/WW. And if you go there, you can also find all of our back episodes. as well as a place to subscribe so you can automatically get an audio version, a video version, or a high-definition video version into your device of choice. I'm Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit. Leo Laporte will be back next week. Until then, have a great day, and be sure to take your Windows Weekly.